Gemma. So we start as part of the series of collected works of the mother. We take up volume 11. So volume 11 is a very special volume. As we know that mother's yoga went through several phases. Before she came and saw Sri Aurobindo, she had accomplished the entire yoga of the Gita. She had accomplished the Kundalini Yoga, the Raj Yoga, which is this famous book by Swami Vivekananda, Patanjali's Raj Yoga. She had accomplished that. She had mastered every possible occult powers and occult processes. And she was an adept in the Buddhist yoga. All this is already documented. And as Sri Aurobindo says, that she had entered the supermind through the front door. So if you look at mother's, you know, what is the program she has put for herself, one can see that she has seen all this in some of her prayers. One can see about the, she doesn't use the word supermind, but already she had the experience of the supermind, and all this she had already before she came to Sri Aurobindo. So this, she was already an accomplished Siddha Yogini, if one may use the word. Then she, during the next 10 years period, she completely equips herself to take up the role of the Divine Mother, which, as we discussed, I think, day before yesterday, it's not the motherhood that spiritual masters, wives are considered as Guru Mata. No, it's not in that sense. But to embody the, incarnate the Divine Mother, which is Adi Shakti. So that difference we need to understand. And then from 1926 onwards, she takes the charge of the yoga. Not only people who are in the ashram, because there were a number of disciples who were outside. And she took the charge, and she was conducting the entire process of yoga, both meeting the disciples, organizing the ashram life, and much more in subtle and occult ways, which has been the way of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. And this goes on till 1950. From 1950 to 57 or 56, 1950 to 56, we see the mother almost going like a super hurricane, almost at a dizzying speed. When we read the conversations from 51 onwards till 56, it's like she knows what is going to come, and she is preparing everybody for the yoga of the future, the supramental yoga, which was Sri Aurobindo and the mother's main emphasis, and for which they came, for which Sri Aurobindo gave up his body, his personal realization, to hasten the collective realization on 5th December. And after that, the mother at super speed, literally, if you read those writings, one of the things that comes across, especially 54, 55, looks like she knows what is going to come. And she is in a hurry to prepare us. She even makes certain predictions, and then 56 happens. Then from 56 onwards, we see that she is now, supermind has come, and the whole emphasis comes on the supramental transformation, how humanity should prepare to receive it, and so on and so forth, till 58, when she withdraws, after which she doesn't really participate actively, because what had to be done was done, frankly speaking. Then from 61 onwards, from 61, Durga Puja day, when mother comes down to give the last darshan, then 62 onwards, she never came down from her room upstairs. But she used to hold conversations with a disciple, with many disciples, but primarily with one disciple, from 61 to 73, April 1973, which has been published as the 13 volumes of the celebrated agenda. So, however, these conversations, the mother had asked Andre and Nolnida to edit them. So they edited, they were shown to mother, approved by her, and then they were published as part of the Sri Aurobindo International Center of Education Bulletin. So they were published as Notes on the Way. Now here, on the way refers to the supramental transformation. So it is something which was never attempted before. So they were very profound experiences, and naturally for nobody was really ready to receive, understand, because it's a completely uncharted territory where she speaks about, it's very fascinating, of course, very profound. And these came out as Notes on the Way. So Notes on the Way is partly a very compressed version of the agenda, the entire 13 volumes. But not only Notes on the Way, we will see portions of the agenda, especially one of the experiences of 1962, which is there in volume 15. For some reason, it was discovered later, but they could have probably put it in Notes on the Way, so it would have made it complete. That one experience is very unique, but it's there in volume 15. And then volume 9, volume 8, volume 10, Thoughts and Aphorisms, many of these things are in the agenda. So there are people who are not aware. They think that agenda is entirely other than these volumes. No. There are things in this volume which have been taken out from those conversations, which later got published in the agenda. Of course, agenda has many other things, many more things, 13 volumes. But frankly, if you ask me, everything that is essential for us to know, as sadhaks, as aspirants, as people who want to understand the supramental transformation, everything that is important and essential is there in these volumes. But still, if one wants to read, fascinating. I mean, it has its own beauty. It has its own... every charm comes with a danger. So, but these 13, now 17, earlier they were 13, then 15 volumes, 17. Now there are 20 volumes of the Mother's Collected Works. They should be read first, I feel, before one dips into the agenda. So as part of the series, we are on volume 11. As I said, they are primarily the experiences of the mother when she is going through the process of physical transformation. Something which has never been done before. And the logic of it is very simple. If the body does not get transformed, all our experiences inwardly, all the high, beautiful, divine experiences, they are wonderful, but divine life cannot be established here in a body subject to degeneration and death. We cannot call this world a perfect world. And that's why the mother and Shobindo take up this question which is there in everybody's mind. People don't voice it because everybody ends up saying it's God's world, it's perfect, and they explain it away. He made laws, man does not follow it, man's karma, man, poor man, he was not consulted, you know, when the world was being made. But ultimately it goes back to the mother and Shobindo, the first ones who take up this, that no, you can't hold man responsible for everything. After all, he is a small little teeny-weeny fellow who has himself emerged as a process of evolution. He has a role to play. But to hold him responsible for everything that is happening is unfair and divinely unfair, if I may say so. Also to say that life is perfect here, well, one has to be lotus eating land or probably, you know, on weeds to say that. So life is imperfect. But the beauty of Sri Aurobindo is, many say that this is a world of suffering and evil. They don't try to explain also. Like Buddhism doesn't try to explain it. Just say this is a fact and you can escape from it. But what Sri Aurobindo and the mother tell us is there is hope. There is something which is happening here, and that's very important. And before I just enter, if you ask me, today only I was having this discussion. I said, if this is not there, what the hope that Sri Aurobindo and the mother bring, then nothing really is worth it. At the end of the day, if it's an individual moksha and having some lovely experiences, God realization, but life remains here, struggling on this globe, then it doesn't make sense. So this is the background with which we can read. And the very first conversation is very fascinating. All the conversations are fascinating. Naturally, we'll make a selection, but probably this will go on. I mean, the volume 10 was about 6 parts, this may go to 10 parts, I don't know, because it's the most important part of their work. So bodily transformation means evolution ultimately of a new species out of a human being. So inner experiences of yogins, we can say, were at best glimpses. They were like, there is something beyond. So it's not like they were useless. They played a role in somewhere opening the doors of mankind to that which is beyond. Religion finished it by turning it into a fixed, crystallized formula. So that's how religion finished the yoga and kept the shell. That shell got occupied by political forces, and then where money and politics comes, everything goes for a toss. So the mother and Shobindo never wanted their teachings to become another religion. And actually you just cannot make it. If you read it, it's so vast, so many-sided, complex, that you try to turn anything into a fixed formal teaching, you finish it. So let's dip into it. This volume contains from October 1964, but as I said, there are 61, 62, which we'll find in volume 15. Some very important experiences. They were discovered later. For some reason, they were put in volume 15. For some reason. I don't know the reason, but anyways, we'll turn to that when we come to that. So, 7th October 1964, where the mother tells us that the changes have begun. So we are expecting what changes are beginning to come up. So we are always looking for supramental transformation. What are the changes? Show us. They are expecting straight away golden body. People sleep and they wake up with a golden body and all luminous with lot of power. But when the supermind comes, first thing it will do is it will upset everything. Why? Because the old world order was an encrusted world order. Really look at our, you know, even 50 years back, people say, oh, past, what? I mean, as an Indian, I love India and everything that India has given and continue to. But if you look at 50 years back, it is also a fact that, you know, bride burning also took place. People were, you know, if a girl grows a little bit, get her married. Why? Because, well, unspeakable things. So all this is not something which can be appreciated that. So what Aurobindo and the mother, supermind is going to do? Clean it. All. And when it does that, it's like we had become used to the disorder. That disorder, when, you know, any room, when you start creating a new order, first thing is that your old order is broken. And that's very difficult for us to understand, very difficult to accept, because we had made pact with the disorder. Like children who keep their room in a mess, and when mothers come and set it right, they don't like it. So she says, people who want to know, but first she says, what is important? Now we are on the path, we have journey. What are the things which are most important? Because this is going to be, this is one thing which at this point I can say with certainty, and Mother and Aurobindo of course have said, this is going to be the supramental transformation and the emergence out of man of a new being. Whether we like it or we don't like it, whether we believe in it or we don't believe in it, it doesn't depend on that. It's gone into that mode. But still, what is required from our side? So she says, first of all, things have clearly taken a turn for the better, not from the ordinary point of view, but from the higher. Yet the material consequences are still there. All the difficulties are as though aggravated. Only the power of the consciousness is greater. Okay, a few lines below she says, one must last, hold on. Above all, that is the impression. One must have endurance. Two things which he emphasizes in this entire conversation of 7th October 64 is endurance and faith. If we have those things, why endurance? Because the new force, the new consciousness, we can't imagine even a little joy, little love, and we begin to have tears, we can't bear it. Imagine the impact of these forces on the body. Whether it will break down, crack up. So, one has to go through that process. So, she says, these are the two indispensable things. Endurance, most important. And a faith that nothing can shake. Even an apparently complete negation. To what extent? Even if you suffer, even if you are miserable, I mean to say in the body, of course. Even if you are tired, to last, to hold on, and to last, to endure, that is it. It will take us through. And often people used to say, when earlier, and some of the old sadhaks, they used to say, look here, it's like a washing machine. You have a choice before you enter. After you enter, you are on a roller coaster ride. because every bit of what is called myelin, all the dirt which has gone into the pores will be squeezed out. Falsehood. People talk so, our whole being us, everything in us is governed by falsehood of 100 kinds. Our smile has become false, speech has become false, heart, we don't even know what are true feelings. Mother says that people mistake, they don't know what true feelings are. So they mistake every passing impulse for love. So all this has to be squeezed out. And that's not an easy process. So one is to just, when you are inside the giant washing machine, just hold on. That there is a person out there who knows how to regulate and when to control. And you don't even know whether you are becoming cleaner or because you are all around. All the clothes are flying around. And this is several stages. First step is the first washing. You know, if you go to ashram dining room, you'll see. First wash. Just plain water. You think, now I'm okay. No, no. Then there is soap water wash. Then you think it is okay. No, no, no. Then there is normal water wash. Finally. No, there is steam wash. These are the stages of the ashram dining room. Then you get the clean plate. So here also, first wash is the, like people, you know, when they clean, there used to be, what is it, soup. You just clean the gross impurities. Then after that, you have to pass it through water. So it cleans another layer of impurity. Then fire. That's like gold has to be changed into 24 carat. Then all this, making it into an ornament for the divine. So that's a process. So she says you have to endure. But according to what I have been told, I mean by people who listen to the radio, read newspapers, all the things that I do not do, the whole world seems to be undergoing an action which for the moment is upsetting. It seems that the number of the apparently mad is increasing considerably. See, 60s, counterculture movement, hippie movement in America, here also revolt of various kinds. Because that old order has to go, you just can't help it. Mother said age of religions is over. It's not a joke. We think it's a statement, we hold on to it. All outer forms are going to go, whether you like or you don't like it. So nowadays children question, which is a good sign. Nowadays it's sooner to come, children who don't question, who just accept blindly, are not the ones in whom you can have hope. But children who question, that means they are seeking. So there is an upsetting of the old world order. And as a result, the people who are apparently mad, as a psychiatrist I see quite oftenly, people who have been labeled as mad, but they are not mad. They are seeking. They are very beautiful, some of them, who are seeking for something. They are trapped between two worlds. They are trapped in the old world and they don't have the courage. They don't even understand what's happening inside. They are carrying the dream of a new world, an ideal world, a perfect world, which they don't find. And they don't know what to do, so they go through this phase. Even adolescents who go through depression, some of them go through various crises. Unfortunately, they get caught in all kinds of unhappy things because of lack of proper guidance. But they go through this existential crisis. Now there is a new term for these apparently mad. And it has been coined in psychiatry as a spiritual emergency. Yeah, this is a new term. That people who go through depression, but actually there is the angst of something waiting to be born. They don't know what is waiting to be born. And the whole world and society cannot understand it. So they don't know whether to be or not to be. This is their dilemma. So in America, for example, the entire youth seems to have taken up with a sort of curious brainwave, which would be disquieting for reasonable people. That's the time when the hippie movement started. And when the mother heard some of these notes of Beatles, she said, barbarians of the new world. Because they are seeking. If you look at those lyrics during that time. And they didn't know. So they went into all kinds of movements. It's like they didn't know. The old thing broke and they didn't know what to search. but which is certainly an indication that an unusual force is at work. It is the breaking up of all habits and all rules. It is good for the moment, it is rather strange, but it is necessary. Only the divine can see it like this. And people would have thought the same thing about Krishna. If you read through Sri Krishna, so-called people who were supposed to be very virtuous, Bhurishrava, even on the battlefield he starts abusing Krishna. He says, you are the person, no, who has spoilt all the youth. He thinks that, you know, his dharma is not with him. Whereas Krishna is the embodiment of dharma. Very few could see. Because dharma for them was a fixed, rigid way. Even Sri Rama's descendant stood with Kaurav. Can you imagine? Brihadbal. Because he felt Krishna can't be with dharma. So he was fighting on the opposite side. Because now the age for a new truth came up and people couldn't understand. Even today the same thing is there. People can't understand Krishna because you can't put him in a format. People want format. So Krishna escapes all formats. And imagine how much more Mother and Sri Aurobindo. So the disciple says, the true attitude at present, is it not to try to be as transparent as possible? Transparent, receptive to the new force. This is happening automatically. One thing good about these children are they are not hypocrites. They will go, you may be a Babaji, you may be this G, you may be that G, you may be 5G. They will tell you. They'll ask you. They don't care. They will ask you. And that's the beauty. They are not hypocrites. So, she says, above all, to be confident. So, endurance and faith, the third thing is confident. And who won't be confident when the mother is carrying us? So, to be confident. The big difficulty in matter is that the material consciousness, that is to say the mind in matter, all this she will explain later, material mind, physical mind, mind of the cells, so we'll talk about it when we come to that, has been formed under the pressure of difficulties, obstacles, suffering, struggles. It has been, so to say, worked out by these things, and that has left upon it a stamp almost of pessimism, defeatism, which is certainly the greatest obstacle, that it cannot be. So, I have met people, others have also met, somebody saying, but everybody has died so far. So, how can you say people will escape death? So, my spontaneous answer is precisely because it has not happened and yet man has continued to aspire. Therefore, it will be. Because what you are dreaming, that's what our scriptures say. Hiranyagarbha, first the dream state. Then it manifests in the outer world, the Virat. So all that man has dreamed for so long, ultimately that will manifest one day. And mankind has always dreamt of immortality, of a perfect world, of a Ram Rajya, call it whatever. So because man has dreamed so long, it will fulfill itself. But generally our tendency is pessimistic. Till date it has not happened. If it has not happened till date, well, it is going to happen. That's what even evolution we hear. Sri Aurobindo gives this example in the Life Divine. He says, if there was a witness and he saw the physical world and he asked God, what are you planning in this barren sort of land? He would have said, I am going to fill it with living creatures. And he would have said, impossible. But then living creatures came. And then again he would have said, what are you planning now? Okay, endless variety. Man, you are dreaming too much. And man came. So this, the whole story of the earth is about evolution of new things, where old becomes only a catalyst for the change. And that is going to emerge. So, but pessimism keeps coming because of the physical consciousness. So she says, all this she is studying. So what is important is very concrete, very tangible and often repeated experiences are needed to convince it. It is matter that behind all its difficulties, there is a grace. Behind all its failures, there is the victory. Behind all its pains, its sufferings, its contradictions, there is ananda. So often, sometimes, especially here, when people come through all the things, so they say, my life has been full of difficulties. I say, see, that difficulty has led you here. It's grace. Look at it the other way. Otherwise you would have been in your comfort zone. Driving a my limit, Maruti 800, sorry. Feeling very happy about it. But difficulties, challenges goad us, whiplash us sometimes, and bring us much faster, digging a tunnel through emergency. So she says, this is what we have to remember. Of all effort, it is this one which has to be repeated most often. All the while you are obliged to stop or to remove, to convert a pessimism, a doubt or an imagination altogether defeatist. Lot of energy of the transformation of the new consciousness goes only on working on this, which is a sad thing. Because, you know, one could take leaps. There's the story of mother going in Golconda. As she was going up the stairs, suddenly she stopped. And she sat for some time. And people asked, what happened, mother? People thought something went wrong. No. She says, people have gone up and down the stairs, have left so much formation of fear. I have to remove it. Why? You know, people think, oh, somebody may slip. Because if you go, you see that, no? There's gaps. So people have this idea. What if somebody slips? What if this happens? I have to remove it. So this defeatist consciousness, it cannot be. That's what we have to remove. If that is gone, faith comes. Rest of the journey is a question of enduring. Hence the importance of faith. And she says, I'm talking of the material consciousness. One may be inwardly whatever, but the material consciousness. So then the question comes that, why doesn't she just impose and remove it? People want magic. I had a little conversation with somebody just before coming. I said, you are like a person who wants to enjoy the train, but you are waiting for the spacecraft. And you are waiting that somebody from the spacecraft will come and request you, please come. And you say, ask the spacecraft to wait. I am enjoying the train and the car. One day I will get into it. This is the situation of many people. So, well, she says, I understand well why the truth consciousness does not express itself more constantly. It should do magic all the time. So she's saying, why it doesn't happen? Because the difference between its power and the power of matter is so great that the power of matter is, as it were, annulled. But then that does not mean transformation. That means crushing. Some yogis would impose, live for a long time by imposing a higher consciousness. But then they would not easily interact. Dreams of Shangri-La. But that's not what is transformation. And if the higher consciousness tries that, evaporate. So some effort is required to prepare. Or even if no effort, faith and endurance. It will prepare us. It graduates. Like if you put in the, what is that baking machine called? Oven. Thank you. If you put in an oven at high temperature, the whole thing will get burnt. You have to cook slowly, slowly raise the temperature so that it gets used to. So the divine slowly raises the temperature. And if time comes when we start enjoying the temperature, then it's fine. So she says, that is what they used to do in ancient times. They crushed all this material consciousness under the weight of a power against which nothing can struggle. So matter transformation was out of question. I am living in Shivoham. Anandoham. What does it matter? This body is dust. Throw it away. Right? Poor fellow could not. You know, it's suddenly confronting with a reality which is too tremendous. So what does it do? It just says, okay. And after some time, one left. And then one had the impression, there you are. It has been done. But it has not been done. Not at all. For the rest down below remained as before without changing. That we know. Look at the life of any yogi. Outer consciousness, material consciousness, nothing changes. But it's like on the whirlpool. You remain above and you lead life there from there. This is, so you cover it up by saying this is dust, this is anyways of no importance, or you say it's an illusion, 100 ways of looking at it. But the thing continues. So she says, now it is being given the full possibility to change. What is being given? Matter, body. Well, for that one must allow it full play and not interpose a power that crushes it. This I understand very well. But this consciousness has the obstinacy of the imbecile. This again material. So you have to allow full freedom. You can't crush it. But she says, look here, it is acting like an imbecile. She says, so many times I have removed, there were people who used to come possessed. And she says, every time I remove, the person says, I have become ordinary, so they call back the... Because, you know, mental illness also gives you a kind of vanity. It was particularly a mania, I am somebody very high. Or if you have depression, it's another way you get attention. Everybody, you know, asks you, how are you, how are you? But when that is gone, then you are just like a regular normal person. Regular normal person makes effort. He leads a life. He does all the challenges. So regular normal person is a difficult situation. So she would remove. She says people call it back. What to do? Because people asked her that if psychological illness is due to possession, you can remove. She says, it's very easy for me to remove. But every time you do it, the person calls it back. So that's where she says, obstinacy of the imbecile. How many times during a suffering, for example, when a suffering is there, acute, and one has the impression that it is going to become unbearable, there is the little inner movement within the cells of call. The cells send their SOS. She could receive what the cells are seeking. We become conscious of it when the mind thinks, ah, this is a pain, I wish. But actually, cells send their SOS before that. And then when it becomes all right, she says, what is the first sentence people say? They say, ah, we shall see how long that is going to last. And naturally, by this movement, it demolishes everything. One must begin all over again. And therefore, she says, I believe that for the effect to be lasting, not a miraculous effect that comes, dazzles and goes away, it must really be the effect of a transformation. Miracles can happen, do happen, so many when people turn. But what happens? That's different. You feel suddenly everything is gone, but then things come back. That's not what she wants. So at some point she takes that look here. Enough of this dazzling phenomena. Get to serious work. And then there is the slow process. Because permanent remedy is permanent remedy. Like you go to a dentist, no? So they'll say, one is, I'll do some filling and it's fine. But after some time, it may come back again. Or you have a fever, doctor gives you medicine, you're okay. But if you want that you never should have fever, now that's a difficult work. Your whole immune system, everything must be trained. That's a long process. So she wants that. It must, not a miraculous effect that comes, dazzles and goes away. It must really be the effect of a transformation. One must be very, very patient. We have to deal with the consciousness very slow, material consciousness, he's speaking of that, very heavy, very obstinate, which is not able to advance rapidly, which clings to what it has, to what has appeared to it as truth. Even if it is quite a tiny truth, it clings to that and does not want to move. Then to cure that, one must have very much patience, much patience. And she comes back. The whole thing is to hold on, to endure, endure. And when you look at those who have gone before us, then you understand how they endured. They knew this. One is magic. Magic is very good to see, but magic is magic. It's not real. I mean, it's temporary. She doesn't want that kind of temporary thing. Sri Aurobindo has said this many times. in many forms. Endure and you will conquer. Bear and you will vanquish. In Savitri there is that line. Bear, at last thou shalt find thy road to bliss. That's what happens to most of the people on the journey. They give up, they drop out, or they just get fatigued, they got tired. Why? Because of want of faith. So one should just move. The divine knows better and endure through the process. Everything is a journey. That's what this yoga is about. This yoga is not a fixed method. Sit every day, sit in meditation for this is only a side process, side dish. But it's a journey, it's a constant action of the divine. And it brings out so many things at what point of time, we don't know. And removes it, changes it, puts a pressure all the time. It's not a yoga for those who are impatient. They're okay, half an hour I sit, do some meditation, do my japa, do my prayers, do some rituals and I'm good. Yes, but God is not impressed. He knows. But that one moment of true love, even during that, that's what counts. So when we look at the whole day, so many times the divine comes to us. At one point, Mother writes, every day there are so many moments when windows open within us to the infinite. But we are in a hurry to shut them. Oh God, this is very uncomfortable. Because we have to confront certain things which are very uncomfortable. Even the vastness is very scary. That's what I keep telling. There are people who say there is no God, you know, that my psychoanalytical friends. So they used to say, man is an animal. I said, you're a lazy man. He said, why? I said, because it's the easiest doctrine. Man is an animal, so I can live my life like an animal. I said, but I can challenge you. You will never be able to do it. Take it from today that you are an animal. There is nothing called divine. From today, behave as if you are an animal. And see what is stopping you. You can't. It's so strange. I have asked this question to my psychoanalytic friends. I said, okay, basically your doctrine is there is no divine and man is an animal. I mean, it's a way of putting it across. I said, yeah, there is nothing different. All this is cover up and civilization. I said, okay, from tomorrow, tell me how many moments you lived like an animal. If you really believe in this, logically you should be driven. But man is not, because there is the intuition that there is something greater. Instinctively, that's why we strive, we progress. Frankly, if there is no divine, I should not even be studying. It makes no sense. Progress is redundant. For what? For whose sake? I'll become a good guy. So what? You're becoming a good guy doesn't make a difference to anybody. So you see, it is not possible. Because intuitively, we have this sense that there is something greater and higher. So Sri Aurobindo said, triumph comes to the most enduring. So you are in it, go through the end. That's why for the ashram people used to say that 1 year just put your roots. Ho gaya na, ek saal. 1 year. Sometimes even after 1 year, you have not cast the roots. Roots means you are now here, rooted. If you keep on thinking here, there, everywhere, you are not rooted. If you are not rooted, tremendous forces will come to take you away. Because they know what it means. Each person taking to the path of transformation facilitates 100 others by his mere actions, by his mere presence, because all those who are connected, because this is not a yoga where you cut off. Everybody who is connected with you one way or the other. And the mother goes on to say in a prayer, and through each other the whole earth. So everybody engaged in this yoga of transformation is that force is through these subtle threads going here, there, everywhere. And so they don't want, they don't like. So she explains all this and then she finally says two things which are important. Endure with faith. And she says that those preconceived ideas, they are a big problem in transformation. Preconceived ideas. and all the social and moral, mental conventions. No worse obstacle than that. The examples. I know people who have lost decades in surmounting one such mental construction. If there has to be, once I remember going out and they said, see, I wish one day we'll put a billboard, 108 time or something, you know, Dr. Alok Pandey coming. I said, if you do that, that's the end of the whole story. This is nonsense. But that's how you see. It's a construction that, you know, somebody is dressed in a certain dress, speaks Sanskrit, he is a yogi. May not be at all. Yogi is union with the divine. How are you going to know from anything external? It's too sacred, too special. So that's how we have constructions of what yoga is, constructions about what God is, constructions about God's omnipotence, omniscience, how we will act, how he's supposed to act. Today somebody was saying, you know, somebody died in the family, went for 87, went to the hospital, had bone marrow transplant because some blood cancer, died. So the person says, I have stopped believing in God. I said, he never believed in God. I mean, height of things. So these are constructions. God is always at my service. If he is not listening to every prayer and granting it, like God is an automatic prayer granting machine, like ATM, APM. Automatic prayer machine. Put a prayer instantly. If you are getting late, then there is a problem. Sometimes you put a card, no money comes. It says, take away your card. That God is not good. You want God always answering. Not only answering, if you have put 10,000 worth of prayer, it should be 20,000. Because he is God. What kind of nonsensical ideas? But this is how we see. So what is required if one can be like that? Open. Truly open. In a simplicity. Well, the simplicity that knows that it is ignorant. Like that, gesture upward of self-abandon. Ready to receive whatever comes, then something can happen. If you are very intellectual, you have read all the scriptures, problem. Like a child, mother, this ignorant fellow, take me. Then she says something can happen. And then she says second thing, and naturally the thirst for progress, the thirst for knowledge, the thirst for transformation, and above all, the thirst for love and truth. If one keeps that, one goes quicker. Truly a thirst, a need. To be satisfied with the world as it is. To believe all this is true. To be satisfied with all the gud ka mithai as love. That's a problem. But that original thing. That true love, the divine love, that truth. So he says, then something will happen. You should have a thirst. Now it's very interesting. Thirst is not subject to sitting in meditation. Thirst can come anytime. She goes on to say, extravagances of an American youth can be a path if that thirst is there. And one may sit every day for meditation and yet you are trying to please God that, see, today my quota is over. So, she says that some people meditate as if they are paying a debt to God. All the rest has no importance. It is that one has need of. To cling to something one believes that one knows. To cling to something that one feels, to cling to something that one loves, to cling to one's habits, to cling to one's so-called needs, to cling to the world as it is that which binds you. You must undo all that, one thing after another. Undo all the ties, and it has been said thousands of times, and people continue to do the same thing. No more bonds, free, free. Always ready to change everything except one thing. To aspire this thirst. I understand well. There are people who do not like the idea of a divine. That's okay. It doesn't matter. Because immediately it gets mixed up with all those European or Occidental conceptions. Which are horrible. Divine is somewhere up there. He is sitting with a carrot and rod. He is with a big dadi, judging you, eternal hell, damnation. Obviously, people don't like it. Who will like such a divine? And that complicates their life somewhat. But you are not in need of that. You don't have to use the word divine. This something one is in need of, the love one is in need of, the truth one is in need of, the supreme perfection one is in need of. And that is all. The formulas, the fewer formulas there are, the better. We bind God's freedom to all these formulas. How silly it is, actually, if you look at it. If he is really free, do you think he is impressed by all the show? He knows, he sees the heart. But that a need which the thing alone can satisfy, nothing else, no half measure, only that. And then you go, your way will be your way. That has no importance. Whatever the way, it does not matter. It does not matter. Even the extravagances of the modern American youth can be a way. It has no importance. This is the yoga that she has given to earth and mankind. What a grand start. Supramental yoga starts like that. Okay. Chema.